Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Ramble. This is episode number 11 and we are really coming into the business end of the season now, and after last game week everything is still to play for in terms of the top four race and the relegation battle. I'm Jack Donnelly and joining me today on this show is my good friends Struan Garvey and Jamie McIntosh, who the three of us are in a little bit of a fight ourselves in terms of our fantasy league, aren't we? Because Jamie's getting uncomfortably close to third where I'm currently sat. I'm not enjoying myself at the moment. I've had a couple of bad weeks and the gap's been closed somewhat significantly. It's worrying. Worrying to say the least. You're enjoying yourself though, Jamie. That's the main thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I touched on last week, I've been fourth for the whole season, and I think if I was able to steal third on the last game week or something, it would just be hilarious.
I've just looked at my points. I hadn't seen my score yet. Oh, that's really not good.
Yeah, you had a bit of a shocker.
24 points from this game week. Something tells me I'm not getting used to it. That means I can see you having secured second place.
Yeah, the Man City of the league.
You'll take being the Man City of the league, considering Graham's kind of, as he said, wrapped it up since Christmas, though, haven't you?
Well, if that means I get to play in Europe next season, then I'll play for that.
You've overturned your ban, have you?
Yep.
For those that are new and listening to this on Spotify, as where it's all of our viewership comes from there, in order to not miss another episode, hit the follow at the top of the feed. Speaking of following, you should do that to us on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble, where the three of us and our other three co-hosts, Graham, Raph and Taylor, will be posting our predictions for this game week's fixtures. If you do want to join the league, there's still three game weeks left to do so. We're on the Fantasy Premier League website itself with the code X1LJML. And be sure to look out for our Premier League Takeaways article on Energy Sport, where all of us and a few of our writing friends on the Energy Sport team put together a few opinions on what's happened in the game week past. And for me personally, I've put in a bit of a controversial one this week that could stir up some conversation. So you'll need to head over once that's uploaded and give that a look. We might as well just crack on with the games. We've got a fair bit to talk about today. The first game we're going to talk about with this game week is going to be Leicester as they take on Sheffield United. It was a mismatch of fortunes for them in their last two outings, as Leicester lost 4-1, a shocking 4-1 loss to Bournemouth, while Sheffield, potentially equally as shocking, but maybe not as much so, ran out 3-0 winners over Chelsea. The main talking point for me with this fixture comes again with Brendan Rodgers. He's done a decent job at Leicester. He's got them back in contention for Europe, which is no mean feat whatsoever. But it's coming at the expense of potentially dropping out of the top four. And we've seen this from Rodgers in the league before, where they're in a really good position all season, but just fall at the final hurdle, you would say. Aside from his tenure up in Scotland, where he was dominant with Celtic, Struan, how have you viewed Rodgers' kind of almost whole career in the Premier League as almost a bit of a bottler for his entirety?
I think the bottler is perfect, because it starts so well, it gets great, and then just kind of falls off the cliff. It just kind of, it's almost when the going gets tough, they just seem to struggle under the pressure quite a lot this season. There was a crazy stat that came out in the game yesterday. After the 9-0 win against Southampton, mm-hmm. Southampton have done just as well in the league as Leicester have, which at the time I think is pretty crazy. But I just don't think Brendan Rodgers has really covered himself in glory in the sense in the Premier League, that he's never quite done it. You know, he looks really good, he can build a team, but then he just kind of falls away at the end.
It's concerning as well for Leicester moving forward after the season, because all their goals have really come from Vardy. I think that was him up to 23 in the league after the Bournemouth game, which he's stayed as top scorer. But with him getting no younger and no one really seeming to fill his boots, I think it could spell trouble in the next couple of seasons for Leicester, potentially. Jamie, I'll talk to you about his opposition number in the game in a couple of days' time, and Chris Wilder, because obviously Jurgen Klopp's going to be talked about a lot because of how well he's done with Liverpool this season, but personally, I view Chris Wilder as my manager of the year for just how well he's done with Sheffield United. Would you say that he's worthy of kind of being mentioned in the conversation?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think with good reason, a lot of people tip Sheffield United to just go back down. And, you know, again, those people will have egg on their face. But, you know, you couldn't really blame people for suggesting something like that. I don't know. They're seventh, I think, in the league at the moment. They're a point off six. It doesn't look like they'll get any higher than six because United have put a little bit of distance between themselves and Wolves now, despite that draw last night. But, you know, look, if Sheffield, obviously City's ban getting overturned is a bit of a blow for teams like Sheffield United, Wolves, who had hoped to possibly sneak into Europe on the back of that. But I definitely think it's been a hugely successful season for Sheffield United. And I'm sure if you asked Chris Wilder before the season, you would be seventh in the league with three games to go. You would have had some memorable results along the way, and they are currently sitting above Tottenham and Arsenal. He would have bitten your hand off for that.
I absolutely agree with that.
He gets all the credit as well. You know, he's installed.
Yeah.
Just this like sheer effort. You know, it reminds me of what I wrote in my takeaway last week about West Ham, where West Ham, I said, used when I grew up watching West Ham, they lacked a lot of kind of sheer quality, but they more than made up for it in terms of effort and just determination and fight for the badge and all that. And this is what that Sheffield United team just epitomises at the moment for me, is just the fight for each other, the will to back each other up and help each other out. And they're just a real great team unit, I think, to be honest. They've just got great team spirit. They stick together and, you know, that's the difference between themselves and somebody like West Ham, who's struggling at the bottom of the table, or down the bottom of the table.
I think the team spirit thing rings true, especially after we saw kind of how wildly celebrated David McGoldrick's first two Premier League goals
were. Yeah, yeah.
Especially considering his story after being released by Ipswich at age 30 and then going, getting a trial at Sheffield United and coming up to the Premier League with them. It's been a real success story for the guy. And while the result hurt for me personally, it was nice to see a player like McGoldrick being able to celebrate something this season. And they still will probably qualify for Europe, depending on how results go elsewhere, because I think with City's situation, seventh is the lowest possible place for European football. I think seventh would net Europa League, if I'm correct, at the base of it, but whether that'll happen, time will tell. Jamie, you're saying that there's probably no chance that Sheffield United will finish above sixth at the very most, but what can be said for Leicester? Because this weekend, it was a bit like early in the season where it seems like no one wants to finish in third and fourth.
Yeah.
Everyone's keen to just throw points away. So it's a question we keep coming back to, and I'm wary of repetition, but it is the biggest conversation at the point. Which of the three teams chasing those last two spots are going to finish there? Where do we see Leicester in this equation come the end of the season?
Ask me after the Sheffield United game. No, I mean, I think, look, you know, after Saturday's result with Chelsea, I thought we were done for. I really thought we'd blown it. And, you know, look, I was watching the Leicester game and they were 1-0 up and I was thinking, oh dear, that's not good. And then obviously Bournemouth came back and I was thinking, oh wow, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Michael Obafemi knocks one in the 90-umpteenth minute, and I was thinking, oh wow, that's huge as well. So, yeah, look, I still think Chelsea have been, but just imagine if Chelsea had picked up a point, you know, but obviously Chelsea weren't close to picking up a point. That point for United, those 2 points dropped for United now look big, considering they currently sit fifth. And I touched on it last, I think maybe 2 weeks ago now, was Leicester's goal difference, or Leicester and United's goal difference, to be honest, now, compared to Chelsea's. Yeah. Plus 29 for Leicester, plus 26 for United, and plus 14 for Chelsea. Mm-hmm. So, look, Chelsea have got a point advantage, but, you know, we need to win. I think we probably need to win all our games, to be honest, considering our goal difference is significantly worse. If Chelsea were to lose a game or something and Leicester and United were to pick up a point, you know, we would drop to fifth because they would both have superior goal difference than us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we can't afford any more slip-ups. It's a real let-off from after the Sheffield United game. But I still think that Chelsea will finish in the top four. But I could see Manchester United finishing above us, unless they're coming fifth.
To be fair, I agree with that completely. That's how I see it going. And that's just taking it in terms of the respective run-ins that each club has. Leicester, by far, has the most difficult run.
The hardest, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've got Sheffield United this week. At the weekend, they're playing Spurs. And then the weekend after, the final weekend of the season, they've got Manchester United. So that could come down to really the final day, once again.
And that suits Chelsea as well.
Absolutely, yeah, because realistically,
one of them will drop points, hopefully.
That ideally both.
Well,
if they can get a
draw. The draw, and I.
And Chelsea don't exactly have the best of runners. They've got Norwich this week, which we'll come on to a bit later, isn't going to be the easiest of games. But then they've got Liverpool at Anfield, and then Wolves, who are still hoping to kind of be in with a shout of themselves, hoping that all three of the clubs in front of them, which are the three we've mentioned, drop points, so there might be a chance that they could eke into the top four, and that could really be a dramatic and nervy final day.
Yeah.
But, Struan, from the United perspective, how do we see this going? Because you've been kind of chasing the pack for a while now, but finally seem to have hit a bit of form. But obviously the draw last night, former Chelsea Youth Academy prospect Michael Obafemi saving grabbing Southampton a point in the 96th minute, or what I think it was. Does that dent the hopes slightly? I mean, Bruno Fernandes, that was probably the first time in God knows how long he didn't contribute a goal or an assist in the game.
He did get an assist.
He did. Did he get the assist for Martial?
He assisted Martial. Oh, well, it's one of those assists, though, where like the forward does everything. He just kind of passes it in the halfway line, and then Martial just went on a run.
I missed that in the highlights. I don't even know if it started in the highlights from the past. I think it just started with Martial running. So how do you see it ending up, Struan? Because
I think as it stands, in terms of the top four, I think it'll be Chelsea third, Leicester fourth. I said this a few weeks ago. I'm quite a pessimist. And
we've never noticed that, Struan. The
thing is, though, right, is after the game last night, you could kind of see that the pressure was getting to United.
Okay.
And that the start was very poor. Credit to Southampton, I think they played really well. They just kind of played with the team with no fear, and you could see that. I think it was Hawthorn on commentary at the end was saying that, you know, Southampton might as well just go for it because they've got nothing to lose. And I think they played really well. I think the left-back situation was quite big, losing Sean Brandon-Williams. But I think one of the biggest things that will help Chelsea, as we said, is that Leicester and United play in the last day, which means one of them has to drop points or both, which I think will be huge as well for on that final day. United's running on paper as well is quite easy. It's Crystal Palace, then West Ham, then Leicester. But Palace always seem to get upsets against United. They always seem to play well. West Ham are potentially fighting for their lives. So it is easy. And then Leicester on the last day, I think. It is probably the easiest, but I do think it's not as easy as it looks.
There we go. I mean, that sums up Struan's kind of tenure on the show for the last.
I can't believe that. Honestly, I can't believe you think United will come fifth.
The genuinely though, like in the game yesterday, I was watching with my dad, and at the end of the game, he said that is 2 points dropped, but at the same time, Southampton were the better team yesterday.
Yeah, so they're no mugs. Like
they probably could have won. In which case, you know. As you can see, I'm quite a pessimist, and I see that as 2 points dropped. But you know, some people might think it's a point gained. But
I mean, you would obviously see a 2 point drop when you see the equaliser in classic Fergie time, which is
not ideal by any means.
Trying to emulate that man even more, he's going about it the wrong way.
Yeah.
We'll get on to a prediction for this fixture. My heart probably wants to go for a Sheffield United win in this one. My head's going for it as well, if I'm honest, because I think Sheffield United, they've looked better than Leicester, despite kind of having similar results since lockdown's returned, since lockdown's kind of ended and football's returned, rather. I just see them, especially going at a Leicester defence, which has really been picked apart. Ricardo Pereira's still out injured and won't return before next season. So Yunshu, as we mentioned, is now suspended after receiving a red card against Bournemouth. I'm really not sure who they're gonna. It might end up being Wes Morgan again if he's still about, and I'm not even sure because it's been that long since I've looked at Leicester's backline that I don't even know if he's at the club. So it could be a very, very makeshift defence, and then McGoldrick and McBurnie are both looking hungry for goals and keen to keep their run going. It could really be trouble at the King Power for Leicester and their Champions League hopes. With that in mind, I'm going to go for a 2-1. I'm going to go for a 2-1 to Sheffield United. I think it'll be... I think they'll hit early. Leicester will fight back, but fairly late into the second half, I can see Sheffield United just coming back and nicking the winner through. Let's go. But Lees Moussa will come off the bench and get the winner. That's my prediction for this game. 2-1 Sheffield United with Lees Moussa bagging the winner. Jamie, what would you say for this one?
Yeah, you're right, all about the heart and the head rule and whatnot. I would like to see Sheffield United go and win, definitely. I think it's there for the taking for them, yeah. I think the last sort of few games they've kind of been not written off, but they haven't been fancied because their form since they've come back hasn't been that good. So, like, look, you had the Arsenal game in the FA Cup, first of all, where they were... I think that was in the FA Cup, wasn't it? They were a wee bit unlucky, really, to lose that game. The Tottenham game, obviously, they were brilliant. I thought the Burnley game away from home, I thought they played the better team. And the Wolves game, they weren't really fancy to beat Wolves. Wolves were the favourites going into that game. Beat Wolves and obviously the Chelsea game. So, look, you know, Sheffield United's form isn't that bad anymore. Look, yeah. They've maybe had a wee bit of a blip like that, you know, game at Old Trafford, the Newcastle game. But they've come back from that now and they seem to be hitting form again at the right time. So won the last two against two of the teams that are up there with them. So I see no reason why they couldn't go and make that 3 out of 3. So 1-0 Sheffield United for me and Mr. Oliver McBurnie to get the goal.
Scotland's finest, which says a lot about us. Struan, how would you see this? I think you'll be in the same boat as Jamie and I in wanting to see Leicester drop some points here.
Oh, 100%. My heart is for Sheffield United. I think they've kind of turned into that team who everybody in the league, you know, if they're on, oh, you want Sheffield, unless they're playing your team, of course, you know, you just want Sheffield United to win. It's one of the feel-good stories. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I've gone for a Leicester 2-1. And the reason why I think I'm going to go for the Leicester 2-1 is I think this game, I think they need to go all out. I don't think they can afford to slip up because they've got Spurs and Man United. I think out of the last three, I mean, Sheffield United are probably a harder team to play than Spurs, but I just think they'll want to get what they can from this game. I think it could be a really good game. Mm-hmm. That's just a really easy game to watch, but I'm going to go for a Leicester 2-1, and I'm going to keep Vardy, who I refuse to take out of my fantasy team, for the fact that as soon as I do, he's going to score a hat-trick.
You say it every week.
I know, you do, actually, you do.
It's the fear.
You need to do what Jamie did and bring in a certain man who managed to bag four goals.
Four goals.
That was some transfer.
So that was some transfer. And we're going to get onto it right now as we move on to our second bigger game that we're going to be talking about. Moving from one end of the table to the other, West Ham are taking on Watford in what a cliche. We can use a cliche once again and saying it's another relegation six-pointer. As, in my opinion, whoever comes out winner, the winner of this game is more or less safe from relegation. I think this could be the game that would confirm safety. Maybe not mathematically, but mentally this would probably finish the conversation. It was a good fortune for both teams in the last outing as West Ham scored four against Norwich, which, when was the last time we saw a West Ham team score four? While Watford scored two penalties from a certain man that Jamie's been talking about all season.
Yeah.
And a 2-1 win over Newcastle. We'll start with the home team in this one, West Ham. Mikel Antonio has been a man reborn after lockdown's ended. He's been flying in his last few games, had a gut buster of a performance against Chelsea, and has really not slowed down since then. I think it was the first time a West Ham player has scored four in a Premier League game, so he's a history maker for his club right there. And I think it's all come from the fact that David Moyes has used him as a central striker now. Because managers past and previous have used him kind of more outside right, outside left as a winger. But
or right back.
Right back.
Yeah, right back.
He's like a Callum Patterson type, if you will.
Yeah.
But I think at striker he's found his natural position. I think he's got the physique. I think he's got the speed to be able to test the biggest and burliest of our Premier League defenders. And we know from seasons past how much of a threat he is in the air. Struan, would you say it's the same kind of thing? Would you say it's been the change of Antonio's position into a proper striker that's seen West Ham's fortunes turn upwards in previous weeks?
Yeah, I think he's helped a lot. And I think another change is Souček in for Mark Noble.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been a really... I think that's just a goal threat for midfield, which I don't think they have. I've been really impressed with Declan Rice as well. He's looked really strong. And Jared Bowen as well. I think Pablo Fornals is awful.
Yeah, thank you.
I really don't see what he... I think he was about 20...
25 million.
West Ham's transfer policy is a joke. 25 on him, 45 on Haller, 40 on Felipe Anderson, and they've probably got about 10 goals altogether over two seasons. 10 goal contributions, I think. And then you look at the players who have been performing so well, like I said, Declan Rice from the academy, Mikel Antonio, I could not tell you where he came from or a transfer fee, but they have looked really good. They're still very shaky at the back, though. It's just I just don't really trust them at the back. But I do think Antonio's form has been fantastic. I said before the game as well, I think sometimes he looks better on the wing, coming in from the left. But I think he's really good, and his form is definitely going to be one of those important factors keeping him in. I think he would struggle against Watford, though, in their back line. I think it's a bit tougher, but it'll be a good contest.
Moving from one striker to the other, Jamie, I was always going to come to you from Watford, as you probably expected. Troy Deeney, again, scored both penalties and made himself kind of that man again for Watford, as he's done for years now. And way back when Watford were on kind of down, you said Troy Deeney coming back from injury would really turn Watford's season around and give them the boost that you need. That's probably been your most spot-on prediction of the season so far. Just how important has Troy Deeney been? Not necessarily in matches, but just as a figure at the club. And
yeah, to that's motivate. It. Yeah, no, you're spot-on. Look, it's not... he's by far the most prolific goal scorer in the league, but I think it's... He just loves the club, and I just think he has this... this energy, this personnel to motivate others, and I just think he's just a great experienced pro to have around, and you know he's a target man, and I think he's able to hold up the ball and bring other people into play like your Sars in your De La Feos when he was playing anyway. I think De La Feo has also been a big miss for Watford,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
You know, I have been really impressed with him, and I still think he could cut it at a higher level than Watford, but I suppose maybe you could say that Watford should be at a higher position in the table than they are at the moment. I'm not sure. But no, Deeney's massive. I don't think you need me to tell you that. I think you could tell that when Watford were playing very poorly. And I'm not saying that they suddenly picked up as soon as he came back. I think Pearson's appointment was certainly did that on its own. But, you know, I think he just has this attitude to motivate others and get the best out of the people that are around them. And so, yeah, he's been huge. And he'd be huge for anything, a character like him.
Absolutely. I touched on it when we were just kind of introducing this game, but they both stand in a fairly risky position at the moment. We've got West Ham, they're level on points, West Ham ahead on goal difference. Both three above the relegation zone. Whoever wins this game, is it safe to assume that they're safe? And does that really come into question the safety of the loser in this game, or is there more to it yet?
I think if there is a winner in this game, then they will be safe. But I think they're probably both safe already, personally. I know that Bournemouth are only 3 points behind them. West Ham have got a minus 15 goal difference. Watford's minus 21. Bournemouth minus 24. Aston Villa minus 27, but they're a further point behind Bournemouth. I think Villa and Bournemouth, they need to win another two games out of the last three, to be honest. If there is a winner in this Watford-West Ham game, you're right, they will be safe. Because then they could potentially go above Brighton. And then are we saying that Brighton are in this relegation battle? No, I don't think so. So I think if there is a winner in this game, they'll be safe. But I've put it down for a 1-0. And I think that'll probably be just about enough for both of them to secure their Premier League position for another year.
Both of them? You think a point would be enough for...
I think a point would probably be enough for both of them. I'm not saying that they would necessarily be safe after this game, but I think that a point would go a long way for each of them, yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, I can see that, yeah. I think...
Considering Bournemouth have got Man City away, you know, like...
They do, yeah, that's a kind of...
It could be highly likely to be another point gained, really, as opposed to 2 points dropped.
Absolutely.
For West Ham and Watford, it's a bit like the top four race at the moment, isn't it? It's not so much you gain ground, it's more about the ones below you keep losing ground.
Yeah.
Therefore, as long as you don't lose every game, you're basically just going to stay where you are and you'll be okay.
Yeah.
And I think if Watford will probably want to come into this one and want to win it more, especially when I think West Ham beat Villa on the final day, which really could decide which of the two stays up, which of the two goes down. Struan, how do you see this one playing out then?
I've gone for a 2-0 West Ham. I think they've, from what I've seen recently, I think they've been playing really well. That's not to take anything away from Watford though as well, but I just think this will be more suited to West Ham as well. The home team, not that that really makes a huge difference, I think they'll get the win here. I was thinking about a draw, but I've decided I'm going to go for a win.
I think I'm going to agree with you, Struan. I think I'm going to go a 2-1, 2-1 to West Ham. I still think Watford will get a goal through probably Dini. Probably someone will give away a penalty.
Another Danny Welbeck bicycle kick.
Oh, you would love to see that again. You would love to see him scoring again.
Just before we quickly move on from that, I've just remembered that Villa play West Ham on the last day of the season.
Yeah,
uh-huh. I'm going to change my... Can you do that? Can you change your prediction? Oh. Is that allowed?
Well, we've not moved on. We've not moved on, so you can. You can change that.
I'm going to change it to 2-0 to Watford.
Oh.
Watford have Arsenal and Man City next. I think they need to win. So I'm going to go with a Watford win.
This could be their last chance to actually get a result this season.
And then Watford would move on to 37 points. And that would mean that West Ham could potentially be within catching distance of Aston Villa going into that last day of the season. So 2-0 Watford. I've changed that. I think that Watford have to win, to be honest, now.
You just got it in time before we moved on.
Yeah.
I respect it.
I just looked at the last two games, to be honest, and I knew... Because I've still got Ben Foster in goals, and I knew I had to take him out after this week because they've got Arsenal and City. So I've been planning my transfers so I can use my bench boost, and I just remembered there that they've got two very hard fixtures to end the season.
So you'll want me to change that for the Twitter then? You want me to change?
Yes, 2-0 Watford. Yeah, I'll do that actually. Yeah.
Well, that's fine. I can get that. What? Who'd your key man be? Because
it's got to be Deeney, isn't it?
Got to be Deeney.
Got to be Roy or something like that.
Big Troy Deeney. There we go. As we mentioned, Villa there, we're going to go and talk about their fixture here as well because they had a very decent win against Palace that was really starting to potentially mount a charge to safety. They're taking on Everton, who looked completely anonymous in a 3-0 loss to Wolves. Wolves just ran them all over the park. Struan, and one of the takeaways that I was getting put out on the article today that Sean wrote, he's been talking about Everton battling inconsistency for the longest time. And Carlo Ancelotti came in and he seemed to breathe a bit of life into the team. He seemed to actually get players like Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison properly going. But since lockdown ended and football's come back, it's been a case of up and down in terms of results. They've looked good in some games like the Merseyside Derby, which arguably they could have won. They could have won, but then you get results like this where they're just completely blown away. How have you seen them? Like, what's been the real issue for Everton since football's returned?
I think it's one of those teams where they've kind of got this philosophy and the style of play, and we know kind of how Ancelotti's always going to want to set up the 4-4-2, And, you know, they're absolutely lethal from set pieces. But I think looking at that team, I think there's just a few holes that need fixed. I think in the midfield, they need proper central midfielders. I think Gomez is good, but other than that, I don't really see much. And then in defence, I think their centre-backs are... I think Ancelotti deserves so much credit because I think their centre-backs are absolutely poor. I think Michael Keane is decent. Absolutely poor. But Yerry Mina, I wouldn't trust him in my back line. Mason Holgate's looked good at times, but then again, a bit shaky. And the two of them are now injured.
Both injured, yeah. I was just going to say that.
Against Wolves, they turned into a back five that consists of four fullbacks and Michael Keane. And I don't think Pickford's very good either.
No.
I really... He's just likely to make a mistake every game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think... I think if they could sign a couple of good centre-backs, because I think Lucadinho is... You could maybe make the point he is the best left-back in the league. I mean, it probably is still Robertson, but I think he's fantastic. I think Richarlison has really come into good form. Wingers, they're a bit shaky as well. He's Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he's got the best out of him as well, which at the start of the season and last season, you know, he didn't look very good at all. So I think I can see what Everton's plan is, but I think they need to improve that team, which is crazy considering how much money they've spent on it over the past few seasons, and it's just not showing those kind of improvements.
Would you have taken the offer for Richarlison then and used that money to try and improve elsewhere, or do you think that Richarlison is like the pinnacle of that team and he just has to be kept, has to be in there?
I always believe that rather than signing one player, you should probably, if you could also sign three, that's
spread
probably
them out,
a better approach, especially for a team in Everton's position. Because, you know, if you look at Liverpool, they only needed Van Dijk and Alisson to get to the top. They only needed one or two players, so you could justify spending 70 million on that. But I think where Everton are, you know, as I said, they need to improve the midfield and they really need to improve that defence. I think you could get rid of Richarlison because you've also got Moise Kean at the club who... hasn't looked great, but it could be something. Moise Kean, the guy who came from Juventus.
Forgotten all about him.
What, seven goals, prospect, Moise Kean.
How many does he have in the league?
Oh, not seven.
I think he was about 30 million as well, which, again, you know, is crazy. I mean, Calvert-Lewin's got 13 in the league, Richarlison's got 12. I think if you can get, was it 100 million Barcelona were looking at Richarlison
something
for?
Like that,
I
think
you could buy two good... Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you could buy two really decent centre-backs and somebody else in the midfield. I think Johnny Evans is potentially out of contract soon as well at Leicester.
Yeah.
And I'd be all over that. I think he's one of the best defenders in the league, and just somebody like him could come in. They've been really heavily linked with Thiago Silva as well from PSG on a free.
I can't envision Thiago Silva strutting about Merseyside.
36-year-old Thiago Silva steps up to the Premier League.
That'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant to see, just not at Everton.
Oh, yeah, totally. I've just remembered as well, Cenk Tosun is at Everton, technically.
Cenk Tosun still plays for Everton.
Is he still there?
Because I think he was on loan at Palace, but he got a bad knee injury, so he came back. But I think he is still at, because he has two goals in the league this season, and Moise Kean has one.
He scored in the game that Andre Gomez had his leg broken.
Is that against Tottenham?
He got the equaliser against Spurs, so I forgot all about Cenk Tosun. Oh my god.
That's just where all this Everton money goes. You know, all these mental signings.
Their biggest contribution to the club is appearing in that Angry Birds crossover as a playable character. That is what Cenk Tosun has brought to Everton Football Club.
35 on it will be as well. Sorry, just to throw some more time.
Yeah.
I think Sigurdsson was about 50 as well. So.
Oh, God. Stop. Please stop.
Oh, wow. I feel horrible for Everton fans.
I know. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous money.
I thought spending 40 million on Danny Drinkwater was bad. Good God, they do it consistently.
And their best midfielders, Anthony Gordon, in my opinion, and Tom Davis, who are the two from the academy.
Anthony Gordon's looked really good.
I'm really impressed with him.
He's certainly not looked out of place.
No, definitely not.
And they have to play two keepers on the bench. I mean, we're talking about all the money they've spent on transfers and they don't have enough to put on a 9-man bench. Honestly. So I do think Everton could... To get way back to the question. I do think Everton have a plan and a philosophy, but I just think they need the players to do it. And I think
Aston Villa to win then? I'm going to say yes. You've convinced me. You've convinced me.
It's going to be a back four consisting of about three fullbacks. Yeah. One of them will be 35-year-old Leighton Baines.
Yeah.
I think Sidibe's injured as well.
Hold on, let me get this up. Keep talking about it. I'll actually have a look on fans to see how many Everton players are injured just now.
It's really not looking good. And then, I don't mean to keep going in on Pickford, but I mean, you know, the defence isn't great, and if anything does get through, I don't know how much faith they have in him Pickford. To stop the shots. And
his one against Wolves at the weekend was dreadful. He seemed to just like squirm through his legs, and he managed to get back and stop it on the line, but then was like smiling all about it, and like I was like, your team's getting beat 2-0 and you've just almost thrown in another one, and like I'm not sure it would be
five England caps. That's the thing.
True. Yeah. The kick at the end of the Tottenham game as well. I know the Gary Neville comment about it. On a level though, why would you send it to the smallest? Both the centre halves have pushed up. Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison can win a header. Why do you give it to the smallest?
Well, you would like to think that he wasn't aiming for Bernard. It was just a really, really poor kick, and
yeah.
You know, he was aiming for the centre backs, then it's ended up at Bernard.
It's a lose-lose, isn't it? It's either bad kick quality-wise, or it's a bad kick that went to the wrong person.
Yeah.
Was it Neville said 4'6" Bernard?
Yeah, I think he's about 4'6".
He said 4'6" Bernard.
He was a free signing.
Everton, Mina's unavailable, Holgate's unavailable, Delph, Dan Gibson and Cuco Martina.
Darren Gibson.
Lewis Gibson, who's away to Fleetwood. Cuco Martino's not even at the club anymore, so I don't know why he's getting included, but you're right. Fancy has Baines, Coleman, Sidibe, Keane and Digne all available.
Hmm.
So it could be it's just four fullbacks and Keane. And whichever position that Branthwaite lad plays, because he came on it.
Oh, he did come on at centre back or something, did he not?
He came on at half time and then was instantly
at fault for a goal.
Just was not marking Dindonker well enough and scored a fairly easy header.
No, you've convinced me. 2-1 to Aston Villa. And that's another prediction that I need to change, I think.
We'll talk about Villa because we've just spent the entirety of the time on this
talking
game
about Everton.
Slating Everton.
Sorry, Everton.
sorry,
Celtic. Villa, they really had a decent win out and a 2-0 over Palace where they looked the better team, probably partially in kind of tandem with Palace's drop in form, but they won't be complaining. If they win this one, they could potentially potentially draw level on Watford and West Ham for the they wouldn't.
Nah, they're four behind, I think.
Four behind, so one off Watford and West Ham, and then they potentially could only do one behind West Ham should they lose. That could run into the final day, which would be fantastic watching.
Yeah, I think that's Villa's aim, surely, is to try and take it to the final day where like a win against West Ham and they could stay up. I think that's what they'll probably be aiming for.
They've got Arsenal next, Villa, so they've got a fairly big game, but they've looked kind of almost better recently where the games have started to count a lot more. Man United was one thing where they were just kind of blown away while Man United were on that decent run, but I still wouldn't have them nailed on to survive. I mean, Arsenal's going to be a tough game, and I think I'll check who West Ham have in the meantime, but I still think it's not going to be enough. Even if
West Ham have got United after, and then Watford presumably.
They get Watford.
Villa rather. Yeah.
Villa. So, I think it's got to be one of the two of them that goes down. Out of the two, I think Bournemouth are nailed on despite a very good performance. Just they're playing City, which could just blow them at the water, bring them back down to
the goal difference as well, probably. Yeah,
it's going to be a massive factor. So,
yep.
I mean, does anyone see them mounting a kind of charge to safety, or
is this Bournemouth, sorry, or Villa?
This is Villa, sorry. Yeah, we're staying in Villa.
I think potentially, yeah. You know, we've just slated Everton, so I mean, you've got to have some sort of faith in Aston Villa. You know, we've said that they've now got something to build on. We've said that this Everton team is a little bit of a shambles. Probably would be a fair word to describe them. And I think that was it Arsenal that we said they had after.
Oh, yeah.
After this one. So, you know, look, I think this is must win for Villa. I think they all are for these teams that are fighting relegation. But I think if Villa, I think Villa are capable of winning this game, basically, is what I'm saying.
And that's why you're putting your faith in them. That's why you're predicting.
And that's why I think that, yeah, I'm going for a bit of an out there prediction. And to be honest, I'm like down the bottom of the prediction league anyway, so I need to go for a few obscure ones.
Because the safe predictions haven't turned out well in the last couple of weeks, we've noticed. Like, it's just not gone to plan.
No.
Did anyone predict a draw? That's what we need to check, actually, for the game yesterday, because that would... It could impact things slightly, but 2 points wouldn't really be...
I had to predict a win for United, and look what happened.
The one thing that backs them. For those that are unaware, we've been running a personal predictions league for... the football of the restart. So we've got eight fixtures, and you get two points for a correct outcome and an extra bonus point for the correct score. So Jamie and Struan are joint last, at least.
Come on.
They're the only ones with less than 60 points.
God.
But Struan, I'll just bring this up again because I like doing it.
Oh, nice.
You got two correct outcomes out of 12 games in the opening week.
In my defence, we had been in lockdown for 3 months and form didn't really exist. So
very difficult to call, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone else got over 10 points, too. you've somehow brought it back, so you're level with Jamie last and on 57. Taylor's ahead of you, so that's nothing to be happy about.
That's not good, though.
He's on 62. I'm ahead of him on 64. Graham's one ahead of me on 65, and Raph is winning. Which I don't quite understand how he's managed that, considering how...
What's he on?
68.
Jesus.
I think my problem is, right, I always go for a bit obscure. Like, see the Leicester-Sheffield one?
Yeah.
I think most people would be saying Sheffield at the moment, but then I'm going for Leicester, because I'm always like, oh, this'll be the game that their form will change. This'll be the game they might not come up. Nope.
You're a man who takes risks in your predictions. It's probably
quite
good.
I've got to at this point, though, because I can't just play it safe and...
To be fair, I did predict Watford to beat Chelsea 3-0 as well, remember.
But that was a jinx. You did say that was a jinx too.
Can I check my Crystal Palace Man United?
But see, that's why I'm bottom, is because I'm too busy. I'm not bothered. I'm trying to help the aid of my team.
that's what I've been trying to do for weeks.
It's not helped, Stuart. Well,
it did help until,
until you backed them. So.
Until you actually backed them, yeah.
Well, I had to back them against Palace this week as well. But I've only said 1-0, so a very unconvincing win, if that can be.
Sum up. Jamie's given us a 2-1 prediction to Aston Villa. I'm going to go a bit lower scoring. I'm going to back Villa, but I'm going to say a 1-0. Because I just don't... They got two goals against Palace, but against Everton, I don't see them scoring more than one.
It's just a defence. And, you know, we spoke about Everton going forward, and I think there is some sort of talent there with Charleston and Calvert-Lewin. So I can't see them keeping a clean sheet, to be honest. But Norwich went there earlier on in the season and beat Everton 2-0 at Goodison. So I'm sure Villa could do it as well.
Absolutely. Everton, you just never really know which Everton you're going to get on the day.
Yeah, so, and we spoke about them mounting a possible European charge, and they've just got nothing to play for now. So
as soon as I wrote my takeaway on that, then it just fell to the dogs for them. Felt quite bad. Maybe I've got some way with predictions that just seem to go wrong anytime I commend someone. Struan, how are you going to predict this one then?
I've gone for a draw, and because I hate saying nil-nils, I've gone for a 1-1. I think it could be a really... could just be a game that's basically just played in the midfield, with maybe a corner gives Everton a goal, maybe a counter-attack gives Aston Villa a goal. I think it could be a very tight game. Everton are kind of in that position again, though, and they've got nothing to play for. Villa have got it all to play for, so...
Is a point, just to interrupt you there, Stuart, is a point a good result for Villa? Is that enough? See, you know, with West Ham and Watford playing each other, you know, do Villa really need to try and win this and hope that they both draw, or somebody loses and win? Or
I think a draw's probably bad because it doesn't even move them above Bournemouth in the goal difference. Unless Bournemouth lose by about... Actually, they could lose by about 5, it is City.
Yeah,
but... Well. Even still, it won't get them out of the relegation zone, but I think a win would get them within a point of either Watford or West Ham. One of them has to drop points this weekend, and then they play West Ham. They do play West Ham on the last day, so I think they need to win. I don't think it's over if they draw, because, I mean, this season, nobody has form, so
But you still think I still think they need to win two of the next three games. So yes, you know, if they don't win this one, I think they need to win the next two.
Which Arsenal's not going to be.
Of course, yeah. You never know.
That's quite spooky. Taylor has actually just sent in the picture of Pickford to the group chat there of him having a wee giggle and a wee laugh to himself after almost conceding a third goal to Wolves. That's a wee bit spooky. We'll move on, and that kind of that's really wrapping up the kind of three bigger games that we were going to talk about today. Now we've got the three extras that we always chuck in just to have a quick wee discussion about, rather than have a full blown analysis of at least one of these teams in every one of these games has something to play for. First of which is the first game of the weekend, which comes tonight. Chelsea are hosting newly relegated Norwich. Just a moment of silence. Thank you, Norwich, for coming. Lovely.
Thanks for the laughs.
Thanks for the laughs. Thanks for the 3-2 against City. That was good fun.
Thank you for the pookie party.
The pookie party that lasted about 2 weeks and then was quickly snuffed out by good defences.
By half decent teams.
Yeah, I was going to say average defences.
They just showed the difference in the Premier League, the Championship quality, though, doesn't it? Because that team, 94 points in the Championship, virtually the same team, and they've been absolutely hammered in the Premier League.
That's the problem, though. It's virtually the same team. I mean, Jamie, you looked into
it. It was my takeaway,
They've spent less than £1 million.
I think we said 750, 700, but it was on Sam. It was all on Sam Byram, I think, as well.
Yeah, Ham,
and these, I've not even seen. I don't think I've seen him play for.
I saw him play in the one game, which was the win against City.
Right.
So they probably should have played him a bit more. It's almost the contrast, though, isn't it? Because Aston Villa spent 146 million.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So you'd rather be Norwich than Aston Villa. And again, this is what I wrote about. I said that. It's a shame to see a team that's tried to stick with the same team that got them there, but ultimately that has been Norwich's Norwich's downfall this season. Is the defence especially just simply wasn't good enough.
I mean, they played Grant Hanley, so I mean that's just kind
of
Just it. They scored the fewest goals. They seem to have a tactic where it was like, right, we'll try and outscore the opposition. You know, I spoke about that first game of the season at Anfield where they lost 4-1. They're 4-0 down at half time, but they had a lot of chances, and people thought, oh well, they probably won't be punished as ruthlessly in the next sort of games as they were that night by Liverpool. And I think there was a lot of reason to be optimistic for Norwich after that game. Because they seem to be trying to play a nice attacking brand of football, but you know, ultimately Pookie's goals dried up, as eventually everybody knew they would, and they were in trouble from that point. They've conceded the most goals and scored the fewest, so that's why they're bottom of the league. It's that simple.
It's all well and good having a tactic to outscore your opponent, but you actually need to have like players that
are... You can't have a defence as well that's that leaky if you're trying to outscore the opposition and win games. I appreciate that there's a tactic to this sort of stuff, but the defence just simply wasn't good enough, and that's just it.
It speaks volumes as well when the goal, as we said, they've now conceded the most goals in the league. I think they just overtook Villa, and the player of the season's Tim Krul, the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I think that sums it up. Perfect.
That all being said, I am not confident in this game. Chelsea, as we know, we've spoken about them plenty of times already. They've got a lot to play for. They're still trying to make sure that they can maintain their top four status, and this is the one game they really should win out of the three they've got left. Norwich has just been relegated. They really have nothing more to lose, and all of their best players will be wanting to showcase their abilities in the last three games, to put themselves right in the front of the shop window, as a number of players like Todd Cantwell, Jamal Lewis, Max Ahrens, they've proven that they can play at this level and probably would do a fairly decent job in a bigger team. So that gives me great concern for the fact that they will be motivated for this game, in the sense that it will hopefully be one of our last for Norwich. And when a team plays Chelsea and they're motivated, Chelsea tend to struggle. So, I don't know, because that's when, right, someone else predicts something quickly before I go out my mind.
As we said, I don't think even a motivated Norwich are good enough to win, to be honest.
I think we forget how bad Norwich are, to be honest, Jack. I'm with you, like, with Chelsea and all that, but I think we actually forget how bad Norwich are. I'm going to go with, I can't remember what I went with actually. Was it 1-0 or something?
You went 1-1.
Oh, 1-1, yeah. Yeah, I'll stick with that. I'll stick with that, yeah. 1-0, Pookie to score, 1-0.
Is this your reverse psychology trying to come into play again? This is you trying to...
If Chelsea win 4-0, then yes.
I predicted a 4-0 Chelsea.
You went for 4-0?
I did, yeah. I just, Norwich have been beaten 4-0 by Arsenal. They got beat 4-0 by West Ham.
Yeah, they just lost 4-0 to West Ham.
Yeah.
They just are not good. Yeah. I mean, they lost 2-1 to Watford as well, and Watford are pretty bad. Not really bad, but the only, like, I just don't see anything for Norwich. 3-0 at Southampton on the day back as well.
They've just shown no fight in this relegation fight. They've had games against the teams around them, which could have... I said it when just before that Watford game, that they had the next two games, they could have picked up 6 points. They could have saved themselves. That was it. They could have. Because they would, that those 6 points were against the teams around them, so that could have boosted them up the table. So, but you know, obviously they never even put up much of a whimper, really, in those two games. The Watford game, okay, they took the lead, but then... You know, there's a bit of a quickly got back to their old ways. The defence again let them down, and then you know the West Ham game, they were just dreadful. They really were.
Right. Okay. You put
1-0. Yeah. It all points to it.
All points to 1-0. You've kind of calmed me slightly. You've maybe got me to put a bit more faith back into Chelsea, which takes a lot to do. I'll go for a 2-0 to Chelsea, and I think that Christian Pulisic is going to have fun. He's going to enjoy himself tonight. And
Max Aarons is not ready.
No, he's really not. Well, if he wants to be Premier League ready, he really should be put up a fight tonight. But hopefully, he just keels over and lets Chelsea get a decent result once again. We'll move on. We'll talk about a team that has celebrated a good week in the sense that they just won 5-0 and saw their European ban overturned. City are playing Bournemouth, who had an equally good weekend, as they really made a case for their survival as well. It seems like everyone at the bottom have made a case for their own survival this weekend. They won 4-1 in extraordinary fashion, really, over Leicester, who looked feeble after they conceded the penalty and Soyuncu was sent off. This could be a spanner in the works in terms of City, but the kind of sensible part of my head is telling me that it's just going to be another massive scoring game and another just whitewash for City. I don't know if I'm the only one in that bracket, but I'd imagine it could be a kind of common agreement that City probably will wipe the floor this week.
I've gone for another 5-0. They've won their past two games 5-0 as well, and they beat Burnley 5-0 in the second game week back.
As have I. 5-0. And someone is going to score a hat-trick. I think someone. Jesus, someone though. I think.
Jesus.
I think so.
I don't like him. I don't think he's good.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that completely. But a lot of the time, I think the goals kind of get put on a plate for him. So
quite a few tap-ins. That's what
I'd say. So, of course it is. But no, I think someone will score a hat trick and it'll be 5-0. So there's my quick and easy prediction.
Quick and easy. Stuart's gone for a 5-0 as well. Do I round it out and go for 5-0? Or do I reserve it and... hell with it. Yeah, 5-0. Let's just say that. Unlucky Bournemouth. We'll see you in a couple of years.
See if Bournemouth win.
If Bournemouth win, we just look like absolute mugs.
I think we have to take this one down.
this may be the shortest, like, lived episode of The Ramble, just because we might have to pull it, just because of how confidently we're claiming.
I think they should be thanking us, to be fair, though, if Bournemouth go and win, because we've clearly just...
We've motivated them.
Just we jinxed them. Well, or we've jinxed people. City, yeah.
Callum Wilson, I know you're listening. You're going to lose 5-0, boss. Just
you're rubbish.
Dominic Solanke, don't you go scoring again.
David Brooks, just don't contribute something like usual. You're fine. It doesn't matter.
I've just remembered as well, they're missing Ake for this game as well, so that's captain and centre. The best player missing.
That could have been a bit of an audition for Ake, because City have been sniffing about him for a while, haven't
Sniffy
they?
Sniffy have been sitting about him.
Yeah.
He's quite a good player. Okay. I don't mind Ake.
Well, 5-0 all round then.
5-0 all round. Yeah, that kind of puts a fair stamp on that. Palace United is the last game we're going to talk about because I just wanted to hear Struan just kind of go off on United a little bit.
5-0 Palace or something, is it?
I've changed to 1-0 Palace after last night. Wait, what am I rambling about?
Well, the response, what's after yesterday's...
I think United need to respond after yesterday. I think there were so many big players who let the team down. I think other than Martial and Rashford, Luke Shaw as well, I don't think another player, I would say, played that well. Lindelof and Maguire looked okay. I mean, like, Southampton didn't have that many chances. I think they had about 3 shots on target in the end. They had one save to make. But they just dominated. They couldn't deal with the pressure. The passing between the defence and the midfield was horrific. I don't think United could string 3 passes together without giving the ball away. I think the 10-man after the injury to Brandon Williams was very unlucky, but that's football. The Romeo red card was just another controversial topic, but I think United have had enough luck with the VAR. Something had to go against them there. But I just think the players really need to step up. But on the other side, Palace have been atrocious. I think they won in the first game week back, and then since then they've been
really poor,
lackluster. I think losing Gary Cahill, just watching them against Villa, because I haven't really watched a Palace game as such, but they just looked so short of options at the back. I don't know how Saka's goal got ruled out for a handball off his shoulder, but yeah, Benteke's missing as well. But it's just one of those games where Palace always seem to get something against Man United. I think they'll sit back, catch on the counter attack.
Under the lights at Selhurst Park and all that, eh?
Yeah. It's just every time United get the opportunity, they seem to stumble a wee bit, but.
Surely you would buy them from this one, lad. Come on.
Well, he did he not? He didn't say 1-0 or something.
I've changed my prediction to 1-0 Palace. Just after last night, I honestly. I think it'll be classic counter attack. I think they'll just sit the 2 banks of 4. They'll probably have Ayew and Zaha up front running the counter attacks. I think they're missing MacArthur as well. James MacArthur and James McCarthy. That's quite a cool wee combo. And I think they played together at Hamilton.
The Hamilton lads,
Oh, yeah, right enough.
It's quite funny, that is. But,
The weirdest transfer announcement video, that was the one where they used the search engine for his announcement. That was a. There was some connection with that, I think, in January or something like that. But yeah, I'm gonna go 3-0 United, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm gonna join you 3-0.
There we go.
Oh, remember, Man United don't have a left back, so therefore Diogo Dalot is most likely going to be playing out of position.
Is he not?
And he's not very good in his current position.
I thought he was a left back, no?
No, he's naturally right, but he does play on the left sometimes
when he's needed.
Yep. To be fair, I think Wan-Bissaka had his worst game for United against Southampton as well. I just think Southampton were actually really good.
Yeah.
They've probably been the most.
It's so easy to just criticise United. Yeah, I think they were good. Stuart Armstrong looks like a different player. Danny Ings, as we've spoken about, is probably good enough to play for the top 6 teams.
He's my transfer this week. Brought him in.
Yep.
Brought him in.
I think James McCarthy had a really good game. And then I just think I reckon next McCarthy season there? They could push for European places.
You said James McCarthy there. It's Alex McCarthy, no?
Alex McCarthy, sorry, yeah. All these McCarthys.
But,
yeah, I think... It's totally off topic there, but I think Southampton could push for Europe. But, yeah, I am going to go with the Crystal Palace. And I'm not trying to necessarily jinx United or anything like that, but I genuinely believe Palace will win this
game.
You just have no faith in them, yeah.
Honestly, I hate being pessimistic, but...
No, you don't.
Yeah, you love it, really.
I love it. No, honestly, see when Palace win, though, I'll be on the next podcast.
Yeah,
it. Likewise, if United...
Hate to say I told you so and all that.
Yeah.
They'll probably be quite happy with himself because he's actually predicted one right.
I know, I'll maybe be up the board and...
Oh, yeah, I'll be bottom.
Ah, see, those are the risks I take.
The risks you take for personal gain. Just not caring for the benefit of the club, Struan. Shocking behaviour.
I know. I'm actually thinking of doing a takeaway soon on about Palace and they're just ageing team. They're uninspiring to watch.
Yeah. I feel bad for Taylor.
Yeah.
Because he's written a whole article about how Palace have done well. They've bounced back, just locked in. There was an interview in Matt Woosie from The Athletic and stuff like that. and he's got it sitting ready to go, but he just needs to wait for them to win another game.
I've got a Bournemouth one that's just about gone, and then they went and beat Leicester, and I'm like, oh no, don't tell me they're going to stay up now.
These teams are denying Energy Sport of good content.
Good content,
this is
yeah.
not fair. We don't want this.
You'd just be relegated.
Just be, yeah, that would do. We'll move on from the games and finally just brush on our kind of picks for the Fantasy Team of the Week. This is where we discuss players from teams we've mentioned and teams we haven't to give you the most possible points in this game week for your fantasy team. Goalkeeper and defence, we usually end up lumping these two together because they all net clean sheet points. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm potentially going to suggest Azpilicueta because Chelsea are playing Norwich. I think it's a safe bet to bring in any defender that's playing Norwich. I would rather die than put Kepa Arrizabalaga in my goal because of how just woeful he is. Other than that, I'm seeing potentially Southampton, potentially maybe a Jan Patrick, something like that.
I brought Walker Peters in.
Good shout, actually.
Four something, I think. Can't remember now. We'll see if I can get up now.
4.4. Arthur, and speaking of Southampton.
4.4. Yeah.
I can afford them.
McCarthy's Struan. Yeah, funny you say that. That is, I'm gearing up to use my bench boost now, and I'm trying to get players in that are going to play, and I'm going to bring. My next two changes are going to both be in goals. So I've currently got Ben Foster, and that's Stekelenburg.
Oh,
Foster and Stekelenburg are getting replaced by Martinez and McCarthy.
Shout, yeah.
And I will use the bench boost. So then I will have 11 players that will actually play a game.
Speaking of your bench boost there.
Sorry, 15 players will actually play a game.
I'm one transfer away from being able to comfortably use it.
Yeah,
and I hate to see it, but I'm going to need to get rid of Martin Kelly.
Yeah.
He's been in my team since day one. Like, genuinely, I've not gotten rid of him since the first week.
I got rid of him a long time ago.
Cahill injury.
He was just a player that he was always just going to be there. Like, he got minutes earlier in the season, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
And at 4 million, he was a cheap.
And he was so cheap, obviously. Yeah.
Him and Lundstrom were just.
I don't think I'll use my free transfer again this week because I've taken 4 points the last 2 weeks. But I think I might steal your idea and bring in Walker Peters next week.
Mm.
Even though Southampton have got... what have they got? Who have they got?
Nah, they got Brighton and...
Bournemouth and Sheffield United. Not an awful...
It's all right.
Anyway, Struan, who would you... anyone that you'd suggest for this game week for your goalkeeper and your defence?
I've got Schmeichel and McCarthy of mine. I'm going to be playing my bench boost because I've also got Aaron Connolly and Kelly on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken a few points hits for that. My defence, I've got Alexander-Arnold, but I think it was Jamie a couple of weeks ago was saying,
yeah,
is he really worth keeping? And I wanted to take him out.
I've dropped him this week. He's on the bench, but
I've made a bigger sub up the pitch, so I didn't want to make too many changes. I think I've made 3 changes, so I've taken a -8 point.
Whoa!
Yes! Good, I need that. Right, I'm definitely not making that extra change now, good. Okay.
It's a bit risky. I've kept Walker in as well, as we said. I think City are going to dominate.
Yeah, I've got Walker as well.
And then I've got Digne, who worryingly now could be playing at centre back.
I'm not a huge fan of that. Like,
No,
I've got Walker, Baldock, Doherty, and Walker Peters, and I've got Trent on the bench. So
I think I'll end up playing. It'll probably be Wan-Bissaka, Alexander Arnold, and a one of Scott Dan or George Baldock. Just because I've had them for ages and I don't see much point in changing them now. Like, there's not really scope for changing them, especially if I'm wanting to keep kind of free transfers and not lose points again. So
I've actually realised, you know, how you were saying Kelly's been on your team since day one.
Yeah.
I removed Henderson, who's been on my team from day one. I've just remembered it now.
Wow. All change at the end of the season. It's been fun having you boys, but times are tough.
I don't think I could have Vardy and Henderson in the team. I think that would just cancel each other out.
Productive, that.
Yep, so I've gone for Schmeichel.
Good idea. We'll move up into midfield. Who are we suggesting for the midfield? I could see see another Bruno Fernandes performance, of course. Like, that's just almost guaranteed to happen at this point. Kevin De Bruyne, probably. I don't think he kind of really got involved.
Didn't have his best game, yeah. No, despite him scoring five goals, which is remarkable.
He'll get dropped, though, isn't it? This is probably just a game Pedro a lot easier.
I know.
Going to murder him.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Kevin, I know you're only two assists off the record, but...
Just set this one out, pal. You'll get your chance. Imagine. Surely De Bruyne will say to him, I'm playing every game, I'm going for this.
Yeah, I know.
Because he's the season.
He's my captain this week. De Bruyne, that is... Oh, have you?
Yeah. I have Vice. I have viced my friend Christian, though. Christian Pulisic.
I'm the reverse. I've captained Captain America, and I've viced Kevin De Bruyne.
I've viced Aubameyang. I really fancy Arsenal against Liverpool. I've also brought in Saka.
Yeah,
my midfield three is De Bruyne, Fernandes, and Saka. I really fancy Arsenal to beat Liverpool.
I might deploy a midfield four for the first time this week. Because I usually go five with two up top. I usually go a 3-5-2, but I might play a 3-4-3 this week.
And my star player from last week there has been dropped to the bench.
No, has he?
Yeah, he has. He has. Wow. He's a midfielder. So I've dropped him to the bench. As I said earlier, I think Watford will get a result. And I've got Ben Foster in goal. So to be honest, I don't really want Antonio to do very well.
Yeah, that's fair. Finally, just strikers, boys. Who would we kind of nod to get a wee goal this week?
So, as I said, Aubameyang. There you go. Abraham,
I don't know if Abraham will play. I think he played himself out of the team against Sheffield.
Yep.
But I can't take another points hit.
I can't believe that. You're sticking with
that. This isn't that. Struan's bottling it.
Struan's going to bottle it. I'm going to get signed.
I physically can't.
I can't.
I can't get rid of him. That's too many points away.
I've brought Ings in, as I said earlier. He's been my one transfer. Getting rid of Tammy Abraham for Danny Ings. He's playing Brighton. And
I think they'll win.
No, I think Southampton will get a decent result against Brighton, despite Brighton having looked decent.
Yeah, it looked okay. Like, especially against Liverpool. I think City, I didn't watch the City game, actually.
No,
but
nor did I.
It is City. So I've still got Jimenez in. You know, they're playing Burnley away. I really don't expect an awful lot from him, but...
that could be one of the worst games of the
world. Yeah.
I don't think that's watchable.
I think that's BBC, yeah, you're right. So, and I've viced Aubameyang, as I say, and I've kept Greenwood in as well.
Yes, he is in my team. That is the reason that I'm going to have four in the midfield. I'm going to make my mind up and drop one of Adama or Saka.
I've dropped Adama.
Depending, because Adama wasn't at full fitness, he came off the bench. So I can play Rashford.
Although he did look very good.
He did look good.
To his credit.
Missed an open goal though.
Jamie wasn't happy. I can't say.
I was really angry with that. Yeah.
That wasn't the best moment for him. So with that brings an end to yet another episode of the Fantasy Ramble. I want to thank Jamie and Struan for joining me today, and I want to thank you all very much for tuning in. As I said at the start of the show, follow us at the top of the Spotify feed to make sure you never miss an episode. Follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble for all of our predictions. And just keep an eye out for the takeaways article and any more articles that our boys will be putting up on Energy Sport over the next couple of weeks. I've been Jack Donnelly. This has been the Fantasy Ramble. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time.